Religion on the Line, 2 hours of exploration into the world of spirituality. Whether it's the basics of faith or the hot button issues of the day, talk about it now, 576-7710. And now, Religion on the Line.
Good morning. You're listening to Religion on the Line, that show where divine driveway intersects with humanity highway. I'm Bill Scholl, social justice consultant for the Archdiocese at Kansas City, Kansas, and I'm joined in studio with
Imam Bilal Muhammad, Imam Emeritus, Alan Shira, Islamic Center, Kansas City, Missouri, along with...
All right, I guess we're waiting for Michael to come, but luckily... Are you there, Michael? All right, hey.
Yeah, yeah. Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda. And along with
Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Bob. We know you're... where are you right now?
Well, I'm in Washington, D.C., and getting ready to go to National City Christian Church, where I've been invited to preach for the morning services. And then the more special moment, not that worship isn't always wonderful, but the main reason I'm up here is, in addition to preaching, is to attend and participate in my niece's ordination service at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Katie Blaisdell will be ordained at National City, and it'll be an honor and a touching moment, as you can imagine.
Yes.
And then is she being ordained to be a minister in the
Disciples of Christ, yeah.
Yes, Disciples of Christ.
Right.
Wonderful.
Yeah, she'll be, although we have mutual standings, and I don't know how it is in Judaism. I've never even imagined, I guess, how it would be in Islam, but we have mutual standing agreements with some other Protestant denominations, and the United Church of Christ being our kissing cousin, and American Baptist and the like, but mostly the United Church of Christ. And I urge all younger disciple clergy to consider being duly aligned, as it's called, so duly credentialed.
Hmm. What does one do to make sure that you have that, what do they call it, the airport? Pre-check or something?
the TSA pre-check. Yeah. What it is, Michael, is you need to go through a polity course in whatever denomination you're trying to, that is not your kind of original one, so that you know the history, the polity, not just the polity, but the sense of how being church in that way happens. So, yeah.
And Bob, in the disciples community, when you say she's you're going to be participating in her ordination, is it invariably at a home church that one officially becomes part of the ministry?
Exactly. It'd be interesting if some of our Methodist colleagues and or friends or members and listeners would call in where, an individual... An individual ordination does not take place. Normally, it's with a group of clergy, but disciple ordinations are always individual. Occasionally, a husband and wife will be ordained together. That does happen, too. And they will be ordained at a home church, but that's in quotes. It might be a church that they got connected to while they were in seminary and where they spent a lot of internship years, or... It could be a church that nurtured them for a long, long time, as was the case with myself. It was a long-standing kind of nurturing. Mm-hmm. So in Katie's case, she worked for the Department of Justice in D.C. and developed a relationship with the National City Christian Church, and that has accompanied her through her all of her time getting a pretty smart cookie. Getting a dual degree from Harvard in Divinity and also the Kennedy School of Governance.
So she could be very dangerous to us older folks.
Yeah.
But Bob, in your community then, seminaries don't ordain, they just graduate.
Exactly. That's the case. Congregations, the ordaining locale is in congregations. There's a kind of tango dance that congregations and the regions do together. In the old days, congregations had the ultimate authority. They could kind of ordain who they wanted and whenever and however they wanted. But as we became more and more a mainline Protestant denomination with all those structures and strictures that go along with it, we developed guidelines, and there is now both a general and a regional and a congregational aspect to all of the ordination process.
So, in effect, is that in order to make sure that the fact that I might be ordained by a particular church should be recognized by all the other members of the community?
That's putting it nicely, yes. And also, there would be to do some quality control. Back in the day, when Jim Jones committed such tragic leadership and led people to do such heinous things as mass suicide, the Kansas City region got very, very quickly in line. They led the way, actually, with having perhaps one of the most strict and thorough vetting processes for ordination in our entire denomination, because Jim Jones was a product of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we have four traditions on the phone at the moment, on the show at the moment, some of us are on the phone. It would seem might be intriguing. There are clearly differences in how one gets some kind of distinct status in our various traditions. For instance, I was ordained, as is in Jewish tradition. There's a notion of a chain of tradition by the president of the seminary. Whether I ever was able to use that title in a job-related setting was up to other people. But the ordination itself came because of the seminary both graduating from and being specifically ordained, that is, the laying of hands by this person mm-hmm. who is understood to be the conveyor of this long-time tradition going back thousands of years. Bilal, is there any unified tradition on how one gets imam status or of any kind?
There is, in some countries and some traditions among the Muslims, there are schools that people go through in order to become imams, but it doesn't make them an imam over a community. It just signifies that they have reached a certain level of knowledge that is expected in an imam. Usually it is the learning of the Quran. Some imams become what's called hafiz. They learn the Quran from cover to cover, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they know the meaning of the scripture. So there could be some work done on that in the Islamic world, but having a degree or an ordination doesn't guarantee that one is going to apply it with the best judgment and the best kind of heart that you would expect from a leader. So
but there is something that would be the equivalent of ordination?
Well, in some countries, I know some countries have schools. There's the University of Al-Azhar. There are a few universities around the world where men study to become imams. They study to acquire the knowledge that an imam is expected to have. But we have a whole different set of circumstances that can make one qualified to lead communities.
So. And Bill, am I correct that it's always the bishop who has the both the obligation and the responsibility and privilege? It's more than both.
It's the bishop that has the authority to ordain, but the discernment happens with the whole church. So we just had an ordination yesterday of a priest. Augustine became a priest yesterday, and during the ordination ceremony, there is a acclamation of the people. So the church lift up the candidate as for ordination as well. But you know, it's generally a discernment that takes place with the bishop and the Christian men who think God might be calling them to this service. So the seminary is a place where that training happens and the discernment happens And there's various stages, but yes, it's the bishop that ultimately acts on behalf of the church and ordains someone to the diaconate, and then a year later, generally, to the priesthood.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I wonder if ultimately it makes any difference to the communities and how, in general, we would serve communities on the basis of how one comes to the position of responsibility to do so. Any thoughts, guys, or do we need to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break. That's a great question. Bob, can you stay with us through the break?
You bet.
All right. So if you'd like to join this conversation, call us.
I don't think they can just yet.
That's
both
right.
Of us on the line.
All right, well, write down this number, 576-7710.
AmericanStandardMidwest.com. American Standard Heating and Air, the highest standard for comfort.
Who was your hero when you were a kid?
Neil Armstrong or Louis Armstrong?
Roberto Clemente or Walter Cronkite? Rosa Parks or Sally Ride?
You're the right age to do something you can be remembered for.
Register to become an organ and tissue donor.
Even if you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s, or beyond, any age is the right age to donate the gift of life.
Learn how at organdonor.gov or call 1-866-99-DONATE. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Carson in the Morning.
Let's go to Anna on the line. Anna, welcome to the Carson in the Morning Show.
How are you?
I'm good. You want to play Trump or 12-year-old?
I do.
All right, let's start with this first quote. Trump or 12-year-old? Quote, you can't expect everyone to have the same dedication as you.
Trump.
No, that is a 12-year-old. That's a 12-year-old. Sorry, Anna, thanks for the phone call. That was not Trump. We're going to X that one off.
How already?
I told you it's not easy. Scott, welcome to the Carson in the Morning Show.
Good morning.
Let's do Trump or 12-year-old. Here's the quote. I don't know if this makes me a bad person or whatever, but it's hard for me to get interested in other people's vacations. Trump or 12-year-old?
Trump.
No, that's 12-year-old. That's from Higher Evil and Whippy Kid.
Including the whatever?
Yeah, including the whatever. Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Dave on the line. Hello, Dave. You want to play Trump or 12-year-old?
Yes.
Quote, I have never seen a thin person drinking Diet Coke.
12-year-old.
No, that's Donald Trump. Wow.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning, 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
If Rob Carson says that I support you, I mean, that's priceless. I mean, honestly, it's do or die. You don't kiss the ring of the old Carsoni here, you're done.
Are you sure it's not the kiss of death?
Yes.
I mean, I've known you for such a short amount of time.
Poison lipstick, yes.
Everybody you've supported, they go away. They actually flame out them like spectacular.
Scott
fashion.
Walker will come back someday.
I mean, just since I've known you, you were originally Scott Walker. I love this guy.
Oh yeah.
There went his campaign.
Oh boy, I sure like that Carly Fiorina, man. Oh God,
took it out back and shot it.
Oh, Marco Rubio. I went to his rally. Well, I guess I'll vote for Ted Cruz then. I mean, what the heck? Yeah, go ahead. Oh, no. Oh, he's all over me now. Oh, my God. Give me a towel. I think I got some of him in my mouth here when he blew up.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning, 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
Sleepless in Seattle was on TV about 10 days ago or so.
Yeah.
And I would be lying to you if I said that I did not watch 25 minutes of it.
Oh.
It's not bad.
Oh, no.
I know you think that I'm only into a certain type of movie.
That movie is terrible.
No.
Oh, it's awful.
No.
Oh, dear God.
No.
There are some chick flicks that are good.
That one's good.
Is sappy, awful.
That's no. I think you're confusing Sleepless in Seattle with, like, You've Got Mail. I mean, once Sleepless in Seattle was a hit, they decided to put Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan in numerous other movies that basically had the exact same plot.
Yeah.
Right? You've Got Mail was terrible.
Yeah.
Sleepless in Seattle was good, though.
See, Harry Met Sally is a great movie.
Yeah, that one's good. Real good.
Sleepless in Seattle, I just thought, was Tom Hanks being coy and cute and the kid egging him on. It just, bleh. It's very saccharine.
I can't believe that this is the riff. This might be the riff that tears our duo apart.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning, 6 to 10. To the brave who fought for our freedom.
Find comfort in knowing that their legacy shines bright on the people they love.
We remember this Memorial Day.
May God bless our fallen heroes. May God bless the United States of America.
FM 103.7 and AM 710. KCMO. KCMO. Kansas City's most stimulating talk. On the air at 103.7 FM and AM 710. This is is KCMO, Kansas City's most stimulating talk.
All right, we got some new bumper music. You're listening to Religion on the Line, and I'm Bill Scholl, social justice consultant for the Archdiocese of Kansas City, Kansas, along with
Imam Bilal Muhammad, Imam Emeritus Alan Shearer, Islamic Center, Kansas City, Missouri, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda, and for a little while at least, we're along with
Reverend Robert Lee Hill, Minister Emeritus of Community Christian Church.
And Reverend Hill is in D.C. to commemorate and celebrate the ordination of his niece, Katie. How long from now is she going to be ordained?
At 2 o'clock this afternoon.
2 o'clock. And we've been talking about different traditions that various congregations have for selecting their clergy. Now does Katie, does she have a church to land in? I mean, will she?
Not yet. And she has some options given her dual degrees, whether she'll go into church work or whether she'll go into policy work or another nonprofit with regard to government or social agencies and the like.
Now, if she chooses not to be a full-time clergy, what does she preach?
She'll preach from time to time. I mean, you know, she doesn't go to... pardon me as I'm clearing my throat. I don't have a mute button. do you mean... if she doesn't go to a church, will she still preach?
What does she do if she doesn't have, like, a full-time gig where, like, okay, I'm the pastor of this church or I'm assistant pastor at this church?
Well, she'll when called upon, she'll preach and preside in worship and communion. She'll counsel. She'll do weddings. As they say in the old days, hatch, match, and dispatch. You know, she'll do blessing of babies. She'll do weddings. She'll do funerals. Whenever called upon, she might be a part-time staff member at a church while she also does full-time work in a secular venue. But the ordination is not rescinded if she's not active in a congregation in any way, shape, or form. And it's indelible, and it's she will keep her status with regard to standing in the denomination by filling out forms wherever she is living and whatever region she's in. I have to fill out a form every year to kind of keep them up to date with what is going on with me. I fill that out every year in the greater Kansas City region, and other regions have similar processes.
Now, yesterday when the Archbishop ordained a priest, Augustine became a priest yesterday here in the Archdiocese, he laid hands, and that's how the sacrament happened. And then afterwards, all his brother priests, his new brother priests, all laid hands on him. Is there any kind of laying hands that takes place in the Disciples of Christ? Or what kind of ritual do you all practice?
There's an examination where people make promises. There is an affirmation by the congregation in the region. There is eventually a presentation of credentials and gifts honoring and signifying the new status. The key moment, just like you described, and Michael, I think, had this, it'd be interesting to see if it's the case in Islam, is the laying on of hands, which dates back to the earliest days of the church. It'll be done in typical disciple fashion with clergy surrounding the ordination council, from the local congregation in the region being close by. And then I will be surprised if it's not this way today. This is the way most disciple ordinations happen. Everybody will touch the shoulder of the person in front of them that's in the congregation, reaching up all the way to that inner circle that are laying their hands on Katie. So that everybody is part of the ordaining symbolism.
Oh, that's beautiful. Is there anything like prostration where will she lay down? Okay.
And the, the laying.
Not yet. I've not ever seen that. You know, she might choose to do it today, but I doubt it.
and the laying of the hands is symbolic of a unified prayer for that newly ordained person. Is that what it is?
Well, it's that, and it's, you know, very frankly, Bilal, it's subject to a multitude of interpretations. It mostly conveys the blessing of God that in the laying on of hands, and that's the phrase, in the laying on of hands, and that's from the New Testament, in the book of Acts, in the laying on of hands, and in elsewhere in Paul's letters, the laying on of hands, this kind of conferring of authority and status and blessing, so that person not only will be blessed, but will be a blessing themselves. So it's kind of like the closest that human beings can get to showing that they've been touched by God and the Holy Spirit. That's why we do it.
Okay.
So I suggested we might spend a moment or two reflecting on how these different approaches may impact the place where clergy would be most engaged and perchance most vulnerable. I mean, for instance, I'm thinking of an article by a gentleman whose name in history is Ahada'am. His actual name was Asher Ginsberg, but he wrote under the name Ahada'am, which is Hebrew for one of the people. And he talks about a long-standing tension between what he identifies as the prophet and the priest. That is to say, the prophet who is always urging the people to do more. You're not doing enough. You're not doing well. You must do better. And the priest, who's the one who embraces and comforts and is pastoral. And it would seem to me that, for instance, that may be, and I could be very wrong on this, that one of the reasons why that historically there was the itinerant ministry in the Methodist community was so that priestly impulse might stay, a prophetic impulse, I should say, might stay alive, because it is dangerous to be more like Aaron than Moses if you're, when you fall in love with the people, and when you want to serve the people, and they employ you on top of everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can remember William Sloan Coffin. The great story was told about a bunch of elders that were going to fire him because this person was too liberal on social issues, and they were trying to get a unanimous vote and trying to get all the elders on one page, and the elders that they had one absent, they went to him, and he said, you know what, I do believe he's way too far ahead of us on social issues. I think it's abhorrent. I don't agree with him on anything, but I'm not going to vote with you, because when my wife was dying, he held her hand for 24 hours, and then for the next 24 hours, he held my hand, and so I can't vote to have him fired. Mm-hmm. So a balance of the priestly and the prophetic, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think in the Catholic tradition, it's the bishops that practice the prophetic tradition. So certainly the Pope is certainly stretching a lot of us Catholics. He's asking us, especially this year, hey, start doing stuff for the poor, start doing works of mercy, take your faith up to the next level. And the bishops have been mirroring him in that. And then particularly, you know, when there's uncomfortable political issues, generally it'll be the bishops that make a statement. So when the pastor comes to his people, you know, in a way, there's a little bit of separation. Well, it's not just me that's saying this. It's the bishops. Well, it looks like we have a hard break. Bob, thanks so much for joining us. And we'll
Thank
be praying
you.
For your niece today as she...
Pray for her and forgive, offer up a prayer for my sermon this morning. So
right,
I'm getting ready to go over there. Talk to you later.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
Carson in the Morning.
Sleepless in Seattle was on TV about 10 days ago or so.
Yeah.
And I would be lying to you if I said that I did not watch 25 minutes of it.
Oh,
it's not bad.
Oh, no.
I know you think that I'm only into
that
a certain type of
terrible.
Movie.
That movie is terrible.
No.
Oh, it's awful.
No.
Oh, dear God.
No.
There are some chick flicks that are good.
That one's
that
good.
Is sappy, awful.
That's, no. I think you're confusing Sleepless in Seattle with, like, You've Got Mail. I mean, once Sleepless in Seattle was a hit, they decided to put Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan in numerous other movies that basically had the exact same plot.
Yeah.
Right? You've Got Mail was terrible.
Yeah.
Sleepless in Seattle was good, though.
See, Harry Met Sally is a great movie.
Yeah, that was good. Real good.
Sleepless in Seattle, I just thought, was Tom Hanks being coy and cute and the kid egging him on. It just, bleh. It's very saccharine.
I can't believe that this is the riff. This might be the riff that tears our duo apart.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning 6 to 10.
CBS News Update. It's a Memorial Day weekend marked by severe weather.
I've been here 20 years, and I've never been under a flood yet. This is the worst I've seen it.
At least four people are dead in Texas, two missing in Texas and one in Kansas after torrential rains flooded rivers and washed out roads. Steve Vetrano is with the Texas Gulf Coast region of the Red Cross.
Many areas around the Houston area have experienced some flooding, and there's been high water evacuations and people needing to leave their homes. The American Red Cross is supporting this by providing sheltering, where people can come and have a safe place to stay, have food, some mental health support.
And Tropical Storm Bonnie is lashing the South Carolina coast with heavy rains. Forecaster Stacy Stewart warns.
Those waves are coming on shore now all along the beaches of South Carolina and North Carolina. Swimmers should be aware that there will be the possibility of rip currents and high waves, especially swells, that can produce very rough surf conditions.
CBS News Update, I'm Heather Bosch.
KCMO weather from KCTV 5.
Great way to kick off your Sunday. I do expect a decent amount of sunshine today with a high near 84 degrees. So it's going to be on the warm side this afternoon. Very small chance for a shower or storm. Going into Memorial Day, a little bit of a better chance of rain, but don't cancel the plans. It won't be a complete washout with a high near 80. I'm KCTV 5 meteorologist Jesse Hawila.
Carson in the Morning.
Sometimes abstinence is the way to go.
There's a warning for you. Don't go to a party where there's women.
Yes.
Just stay away from women.
Having such a good time in college.
That's exactly how I envisioned it.
Jared, I like that Whitesnake poster.
Yeah.
Did you get that from your dad?
I bought it on eBay.
You know, you'll never have girls down to your room.
Whole college thing's really working out. I'm thinking about getting a tarantula. That'll really drive the chicks wild.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning 6 to 10.
Swipe to win at Price Shopper. Swipe your rewards card at any area Price Shopper for your chance to win a VIP experience for two at the Kenny Chesney concert at Arrowhead on July 16th. Price Shopper, fresher ways to save.
Carson in the Morning.
There's all these people knocking Tinder.
Because they're saying there's a rise in STDs that could be associated with Tinder usage.
I'm not immediately wielding my rod at these women. It's an app for meeting people.
Basically, a thumbs up or thumbs down immediately as you look at your phone.
And if they thumbs you up, if you thumbs the girl up.
If they thumbs you up.
It's not even thumbs you up. You screw me up. I think it's a heart icon. I don't know. I haven't used it
in forever.
If
they thumbs you up, you in.
You hit the little green icon, or you swipe the right direction, and it'll say that you like them. And if they like you,
can you tell when you've been wiped to the left?
No.
When they rejected you?
No,
you can't. That would suck. That would be terrible.
It is sad when you see a girl and you're like, oh my God, this is my dream girl. We share all the same interests. She's beautiful. I would love to take her out and buy her a cup of coffee.
Yes.
And then you swipe right and then nothing. Like it's not a match.
Yeah.
That's when you know, oh, she probably saw my profile and said, uh-uh.
No. Mm-mm.
This guy says he works in radio. That guy must be a loser.
Carson in the Morning. Weekday morning 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
Mitt Romney has completely given up the concept, the idea. He wanted to do third party with Kasich and possibly Ben Sasse out of Nebraska.
I like that name, Sasse.
Hey, don't you sass me.
That'd be a good radio name for me.
Jared Sasse.
Jared Sasse Carter. I'm going to have Sasse as my middle name, guys.
If you could use Sasse as your first name, Hole as your last.
Hey, hey, hey. Oh, no. Hey, that's mean. No.
Carson in the Morning. Weekday morning, 6 to 10. Carson in the Morning.
So one more question on this Target thing.
Yes, sir.
Target
has made itself a Target.
Wow. I see what you did there.
All right.
Weekday morning, 6 to 10. KCMO.
Hey, guys, it's Carson. Hope you have a great weekend. Take the podcast with you. This week, Donald Trump clinches the nomination. The streetcar crashed and was shut down. And Hillary Clinton got a big smackdown from the Justice Department. Just go to KCMOtalkradio.com. Look for Carson in the Morning.
You're listening to Religion on the Line. I'm Bill Scholl, the social justice consultant for the Archdiocese of Kansas City in Kansas, and I'm joined in studio along with
Imam Bilal Muhammad, Imam Emeritus, Alan Shearer Islamic Center, Kansas City, Missouri, along with
Rabbi Michael Zedek, Rabbi Emeritus, Temple B'nai Yehuda.
So, Michael, what do you have to talk about today? Let's go through your stack of stuff.
Okay, my stack of stuff. First, of course, this show is, as we're speaking, Memorial Day weekend, so I have a strong suspicion that we may have some fewer and or different listeners, depending on somebody may be still up from the night before or whatever the case may be. But I do have some suggestions in addition to how we mark this time of year. Because, after all, this used to be a solemn time. Nowadays, it's a little extra time for some picnicking and some shopping, right, in general, for most folks, I suspect, as opposed to a time to reflect and visit cemeteries, etc. So here's an item. This is from a publication I get called The Week. I had not seen it anywhere else. It's called The Health Benefits of Church. People who attend religious services a couple of times a week may live longer, a new study suggests. Harvard University researchers analyzed data from the Nurses' Health Study, a survey of 74,534 healthy women. And one of the things that's interesting about this, of course, is that most surveys tend to be about with men or mixed gender, but right. Nonetheless, at the start of the study in 1992, participants were asked how often they went to church. I'm assuming they mean that in a larger context of attended religious services. The researchers then tracked them for 20 years. By 2012, 13,537 of the women had died. After adjusting for other risk factors, it turned out that the ones who attended services more than once a week were 33% less likely to have died of any cause than those who never went at all. By the way, I haven't finished this little, there's a little bit more to go, but I do suspect that 100% of those people will eventually die. I can rely on that. Overall, going to church at least once a week was associated with a lifespan increase of about 5 months. There is evidence, and I'm quoting from the report, there is evidence that it provides social support, discourages smoking, decreases depression, and promotes optimism or hope, study author Tyler Vanderveed tells medicaldaily.com. Based on previous research, however, the church effects may not be as strong for men as it is for women.
Wow.
But my own presumption is it's the network of connections that may be the single most important factor. There's a magnificent line in the Talmud that translates, give me friends or give me death.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That is beautiful.
Yeah. That social nexus, I think, is critical for all of us. That said, there may be some folks who might want to have a commentary or two on that. The Justice Department this week came out that it is going to seek the death penalty against, Roof, the guy who shot the folks at the Mother Emanuel Church in June. And I wonder if some folks may have some thinking on that, especially because one of the dramatic pieces of that horrific crime was how the folks at Mother Emanuel, quote-unquote, forgave the sinner. Perhaps someone has a thought or two. There's a new book out, interestingly, in context of Bob's discussion about participating in his niece's ordination, and the title of the article that talked about the book in the Chicago Tribune on Friday was "How First Female Rabbi Quote Fought for It Close Quote." And Sally Presan, whom I knew from my days in seminary, she was ordained in 1972, 2 years before I had that privilege. There's a book that's celebrating the Reform, Conservative, and Reconstructionist movements in Judaism's encounter with women as rabbis. So it seems it's a group of essays. And Sally was the first woman ordained in the United States. There's probably another woman who was ordained prior to her in Germany, but she never got a chance to function or find opportunities as a rabbi as she was murdered during the Holocaust by the Nazis, but that's an item. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued, and I wish Bob were here, given that he's a Texas Christian University proud alum. the Baylor University scandal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, this is a school that I think is actually still definitively affiliated with the Baptist community, as opposed to many universities that had that used to be and now nominally at most. And the whole tragedy of what's going on there, and if folks may have a thought or two that is worth their reflections, because this is a school that used to forbid dancing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, two other items, and then it's free-for-all as far as I'm concerned for you guys to throw in some stuff. And both of these items I have our faithful caller Mike in Fairway in mind. This is one that's from The Economist, a British publication. It's the recipe to life's ingredients, because we've had this discussion more than once. Determining how life arose used to involve simply asking where its constituent molecules came from. Some ferment of simpler chemicals bubbling in a tarry pool sparked by lightning. Ready-made molecules like amino acids, the components of proteins delivered on a crashing comet. This week, Nature Geoscience reported another idea, that spectacularly large flares released by the young sun could have sent high-energy particles screaming through the mundane gases of Earth's early atmosphere, splitting them into bits that could resemble into complex organic molecules. The cometary delivery idea got a boost as well. Amino acids have been spotted on comets before, but a study in Science Advances this week revealed that the particular comet that a European space probe is following has them too. The universe, it seems, I love this line, has no problem amassing life's raw ingredients. The question now is, what were the processes that cooked them up into something interesting? For both Mike and I think that's, for both Mike and me, I think that's of intrigue, because we both recognize the mystery. We have different notions of how that mystery came to be. And Mike, this last one, if you happen to be listening today, the CEO of Chevron says climate change is a wonderful opportunity for his business. That's my stuff.
Okay. All right. So Michael, as a man of faith, when you read a scientific article like that saying that we can show scientifically that nature can produce organic or organic material.
Mm-hmm.
Now, an atheist hears that and go, and I think they tend to say, see, we don't need God. We don't need God. I'm curious, as a man of faith, how do you respond to that
on one foot, I respond in the following fashion. The mystery remains to me, and I find these kinds of things awe-inspiring, not awe-diminishing, to begin. That the universe seems patterned for life to be possible simply points to me to the argument for design, I don't claim it's a proof. Nobody calls, I don't think anyone should legitimately call it a proof for God. But the notion that everything in our experience that reveals pattern or design has to have a designer does make a case for me that there is a capital D designer.
And I agree. And, as a Muslim, I agree with that statement.
Rabbi Akiba, about 1,800 years ago, said, as a house implies a builder, the universe points to its maker. Mm-hmm. And that's not sufficient, and it doesn't get me to the God I worship.
Yeah.
But it does get me to an understanding of humility.
Right.
And,
so
and I love science for its hows, not for its whys.
So that when he who is, I am, shows up in a burning bush, it's not like a surprise to man. Oh, what? There's a God. Yeah. I mean, in the Catholic tradition, we go so far as to say, I mean, that you can know by looking at nature that God exists, and that's to put it in modern parlance, that's a scientific fact. I mean, we would say that a God exists, that there's a mind outside of the universe that has brought it into existence. And it's not just the presence of complex organisms, but rather just existence itself. and Thomas Aquinas, the great philosopher and saint who wrote the Summa Theologica, he proposes five proofs for the existence of God. And to my knowledge, there's never been a counter to that. So I'd be interested. Maybe Michael, you might be aware of that. It just seems like as a philosophical project in the modern days, we've just kind of walked away from that debate and just said, well, you can't really prove that God exists because you can't measure or see God. It's always struck me that part of the problem in the modern world is we only admit of science that can be measured. If we can't produce it in a factory, if we can't produce it in a laboratory, it doesn't really matter. And that's a constricting of the Western intellectual tradition. So I'd be curious what our audience thinks. Do you think nature points to a God? Do you think is it just an article of faith? Join the discussion. 576-7710. 576-7710. And that death penalty, that was Dylann Roof. He was someone who killed quite a bit of people. And that is in South Carolina or North Carolina?
I think it was South Carolina, yeah, South Mother Carolina. Emanuel Church and Mother Emanuel AME.
Yeah, he killed nine people in Charleston, South Carolina last year in the Justice Department seeking the death penalty. And it's interesting. So did everyone forgive him in that congregation?
Like, my recollection is that it was a big there was this big moment of forgiveness extended. Doesn't mean that there is no sin.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like they're saying let this guy go. Mm-hmm. Let this guy go. Where does Judaism, is there, like, in Catholicism now, there's a uniform voice against the death penalty, particularly in the Western world. I mean, the Catholic Church teaches that countries that don't need the death penalty to keep people safe, which, you know, because we have the capacity to imprison people for life, that it should be avoided.
Right.
That
well,
it used to be, yeah.
I'm sorry, Bill, but
basically,
we should probably take a break
and
come back. And Islam has a lot to say on this, too, of course.
All right, so let's talk a little death penalty. 576-7710 to join the conversation. Thanks, Michael, for your help.
Carson in the morning.
Paul Ryan, I don't know him well, but I'm sure I'm going to get along great with him. And if I don't, he's going to have to pay a big price, okay?
We may be witnesses to a biblical prophecy come true. And there shall be destruction and darkness come up in creation.
There's nobody that's going to beat us.
Wow, man! That really put it in perspective for me, the prospect of a Trump presidency. Donald Trump cannot be stopped.
Carson in the morning.
Godzilla!
Weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Oh, man.
Stan Kramer here for Pro Foundation Technology. Do you have serious foundation issues or water in your basement? Call the professionals, Pro Foundation Technology, for a free, thorough structural inspection. Pro Foundation Technology has repaired thousands of Kansas City homes since they started the company in 1978. Local engineer Don Carter calls Pro Foundation Technology the gold standard for foundation repair. Pro Foundation Technology recently won the Angie's List Super Service Award. If you have serious foundation problems, don't procrastinate. Call 816-358-3300 or on the web at profoundationtech.com. For a limited time, KCMO radio listeners will get a box of free Omaha steaks as our appreciation for letting us evaluate your foundation issues. Call Pro Foundation Technology now at 816-358-3300 or on the web at profoundationtech.com.
The cure for those basement blues.
Are you hiring but not sure where to find the best candidates? As a business owner, I can tell you that your company is only as good as the people you hire. I can also tell you that posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. But when you're short-staffed, there's no time to deal with the dozens of different job sites. Until now. Thanks to ZipRecruiter.com, I can post to 100-plus job sites with one single click and be instantly matched to candidates from over 6 million resumes. Just post once, and within 24 hours, watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter has been used by over 400,000 businesses, and you can try it right now for free. Getting the right people for your company is so important. Try ZipRecruiter and get your perfect candidate before they go to somebody else. Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/talk. That's ZipRecruiter.com/talk. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/talk.
Carson in the morning.
Let's go to Anna on the line. Anna, welcome to the Carson in the Morning Show.
How are you?
I'm good. You want to play Trump or 12-year-old?
I do.
All right, let's start with this first quote. Trump or 12-year-old? Quote, you can't expect everyone to have the same dedication as you.
Trump.
No, that is 12-year-old. That's a 12-year-old. Sorry, Anna. Thanks for the phone call. That was not Trump. We're going to X that one off.
Out already.
I told you it's not easy. Scott, welcome to the Carson in the Morning Show.
Good morning.
Let's do Trump or 12-year-old. Here's the quote. I don't know if this makes me a bad person or whatever, but it's hard for me to get interested in other people's vacations. Trump or 12-year-old?
Trump.
No, that's 12-year-old. That's from Higher Even Whippy Kid.
Including the whatever?
Yeah, including the whatever. Yeah.
I'm surprised.
Dave on the line. Hello, Dave. You want to play Trump or 12-year-old?
Yes.
Quote, I have never seen a thin person drinking Diet Coke.
12-year-old.
No, that's Donald Trump.
Wow.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning, 6 to 10.
Take control of your money. Start by listening to The Dave Ramsey Show.
One thing that causes people's financial problems to get exponentially worse, you don't deal with it. You get behind on a credit card, it goes into default, and they don't call you, and you know you have an old credit card debt of $2,000 laying there, and you don't deal with it. 8 years later, $2,000 is now $14,000 because you didn't deal with it.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weekdays 1 to 4, KCMO. To the brave who fought for our freedom.
Find comfort in knowing that their legacy shines bright on the people they love.
We remember this Memorial Day.
May God bless our fallen heroes. May God bless the United States of America.
FM 103.7 and AM 710. KCMO. KCMO. Kansas City's most stimulating talk. On the air at 103.7 FM and AM 710. Kansas City's most stimulating talk.
I never dreamed that any mere physical experience could be so stimulating.
KCM.
Oh!
KCMO.
Religion on the Line. We're talking about the death penalty. We're talking about a lot of different things. If you want to join us, 576-7710. Justice Department has announced they're going to seek the death penalty for Dylann Roof. And our traditions have very different opinions about the death penalty. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So let's go to Mike in Fairway. Mike, you're on Religion on the Line.
I'm talking more about the life instead of the death penalty.
Okay, yeah, what do you want?
First of all, I was surprised. It almost sounded like Rabbi Zedek was inviting me to call.
Oh.
I better...
Mike, I consider you a friend of the show.
Now, I found the article interesting because the fact that there's raw materials, and so therefore that gives them hope that life could have happened with some kind of... occurrence in nature. That'd be similar to saying we have the raw materials for cement on the earth, and so therefore there could be a naturalistic explanation for bricks to be made or blocks to be made and buildings to be made naturalistically without any design. The fact is we have had abundance of these raw materials. We can make as many organic molecules as we want. And we have found that there's no way that they come together to make proteins, DNA, and RNA on their own. In fact, Dean Kenyon, a biologist in the 70s, wrote a book, Biological Predestination, which he thought that he believed that life could come about naturalistically. But then after decades of studying, he found out you could have all but the last amino acid of a protein, and there's nothing in that protein molecule that make it form its own, finish the protein. It's done by the information in the cell. Now, another thing, information, which you see in bricks or stone wall, you also see in life. We don't have any example of information happening except with someone who gives the information. In fact, you have the SETI project, which is the scanning for extraterrestrial life, or life from another galaxy, is based on the idea that if they find sounds that communicate information, that there has to be life. It has to be a designer. It can't be just naturalistic if it's not random noise.
Well, I think the SETI project is looking for signs of intelligent life, right? Like yes, they're looking for some kind of mathematical pattern to respond. I mean, they send out a
random. Yeah. It could be random. It shows purpose or designer. Yes. Now, they accept that as evidence that there might be life out there. But when you see it in the human body or the DNA, RNA, the complex molecule with information, they don't see that that's they won't let you talk about it until this Dean Kenyon, after he said in class, I think it's San Diego State, if I'm not mistaken, that it appears there might be design in the RNA, DNA, and proteins because it just can't be made chemically. It has to be made biochemically. He was demoted and could not teach freshman biology anymore because it wasn't permitted.
Yeah, and you make a good point. There's a great movie called Expelled.
Yes.
I forget the what's his name?
Ben Stein.
And he kind of covers sort of a systematic prejudice against anyone, any scientist who suggests the idea that nature or biology in some way might point to a mind beyond it. That they're kind of systematically sort of pushed out of academia. Which is regrettable because I mean science bases its moral claims and its truth claims on the fact that we have a rigorous process of challenging ideas, and so we're always refining what we propose to be true because we're open to debate. So it's always alarming. And you know, I know Michael, you support support might not be the right word, but you've talked a lot about global climate change on this show, and I think one of the challenges that people have is when they see things like ClimateGate, where they see scientists wanting to achieve, you know, with the best of intentions, hey, I think the planet's being, you know, destroyed. Let's push out anyone who denies this idea. It goes against our data. It creates kind of a scandal where people go, well, can we trust this data?
Well, then they say the science is settled, which means it's no longer science because it can't be falsified or challenged.
Yeah, yeah.
There we agree.
Yeah.
There we agree.
So, So it does seem like in our culture, or particularly in the culture of science, that there really is a need to be open to the Christian perspective. And I'm not saying the Christian perspective necessarily has a position on global climate change, but particularly on life.
Before Jesus, it's not just Christianity, that there's always this argument between idealism and materialism for the about the universe. It's just in the 1920s, the materialists declared themselves the winners.
Yeah, there's no argument that we got to get off the air right now.
So thanks for calling.
Carson in the morning.
A streetcar staffer noticed smoke coming from the ground near a construction site on Main and 20th Street. The poles holding up overhead wires that power the streetcar are also right next to the construction, and they touched the pole, and it was a little warm to the touch. That happened to my first-generation iPod. Not kidding. Had it plugged in on the floor, and it literally melted the carpet under the first-generation iPod.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
My laptop gets very hot, actually. I noticed that. I was watching a TV show on it the other day, mm-hmm. and I had it sitting on my belly,
yeah.
and I didn't have a shirt on. Late at night.
Yeah.
Watching something before
sure
bed.
You didn't have it on your lap?
No, I didn't.
It's a laptop, man.
I was, no. It was on my belly because I was in a laying position. And I was watching. And I realized as I tell the story on the radio that it sounds like I was looking at something lewd and lascivious. I was not.
Freeze up your hands.
I was watching a rerun of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Thank you very much.
Carson in the Morning, weekday morning 6 to 10. FM 103.7 and AM 710. KCMO, Kansas City's most stimulating talk.